Another idea, which was probably even simpler, was to simply oppose the idea of selling land. And that idea was promoted in a series of meetings that Māori held around the country. And in one of these meetings in South Taranaki at a place called Manawapo, Wiramu Kingi attended, and they formed an organisation around that idea. And the organisation that they formed became known as the Māori Land League. The Māori Land League. Now, the league was reported on in newspapers at the time. There were lots of newspapers in New Zealand by that time. It was also discussed in Parliament, and you can look up the parliamentary record to see the debate about the Māori Land League. And in those debates and in the newspapers, the Māori Land League was portrayed as being an organisation that was an underground organisation, a covert anti-land selling organisation, but also an organisation that was portrayed in the media at the time as being anti-Pākehā as well. Its leader, they said, was Wiramu Kingi, Te Rangitāke, this guy here. So here was Wiramu Kingi by the 1850s, moved back to Taranaki. He'd become the leader of this anti-Pākehā, anti-land selling organisation, and he'd moved back to Taranaki, and he was also becoming fabulously wealthy at the expense of the poor old New Zealand company settlers living in New Plymouth at that time. He probably came to epitomise everything that was perceived to be bad about Māori people at that time. And so they had lots of reasons not to like him. And the Crown decided that Wiramu Kingi had to be stopped somehow in the very near future. Now, that opportunity to stop him occurred in late 1859, when one of the other chiefs within Te Ātaoa offered the land for sale, offered the land that Wiramu Kingi was living on, for sale to the government, to the Crown Purchasing Officer, a guy called Donald Maclean. Now, why did this other chief do that? And the other chief's name, incidentally, was Taylor, which transliterates back into Māori as Taira, T-E-I-R-A. Why did Taira offer that land for sale to the government? Well, because Wiramu Kingi and Taylor had had an argument about a wedding, of all things. It was supposed to be an arranged marriage that was supposed to happen within the tribe. Wiramu Kingi's niece was supposed to marry Taylor's nephew, but because Kingi was the paramount chief in the tribe, he was able to veto that wedding, said, no, it's not going to happen, which annoyed Taylor. So to get back at Kingi, Taylor offers the land that he's living on for sale to the government. Now, in their wisdom, or lack of it, the government accepted Taylor's offer. Except that we know today that the governor back then and Donald Maclean both knew that Taylor was not the paramount chief in the tribe. And we know that they knew that because we've got letters between them where they discussed that very issue. We also know that they knew that no one Māori person could sell land that was collectively owned by the whole tribe, because they also discussed that issue in those letters as well. Yet despite that knowledge, both of these guys, Maclean and the governor at the time, who was Gore Brown, decided to accept that offer of the sale of Kingi's land. They write a letter to Kingi saying, look, sorry old boy, you're going to have to move, the land's been sold. Wiramu Kingi writes back to the governor in pretty polite English this time, saying, look governor, we think there's been a mistake. I'm the big chief of the tribe, not Taylor, and this land isn't for sale. And there's an exchange of letters over several months in late 1859 about this issue. Eventually, the Crown officials in New Plymouth get in on the act as well. They decide to send in surveyors onto the block that Wiramu Kingi is living on in Waitara. For those of you that know the region, where the township of Waitara is now standing, where most of the shops are on the south side of the river, is the land in question. And the surveyors, which were ex-New Zealand company surveyors, came in and they surveyed the block of land, and according to the tribal stories that we've got, Every day, the old women and the children would go and pull up the survey pegs. And this went on for a number of weeks in early March of 1860. And this annoyed the hell out of the officials in New Plymouth, as you can imagine. And so another letter is written to Kingi from New Plymouth. This letter is a bit like the treaty. It's written in English and in Māori. The English version of the letter says, this land's been sold, you'll have to shift. The Māori version of the letter says, if you don't shift, we will bring in troops and force you to move. That Māori version of the letter is essentially a declaration of war on Te Ātaoa. Well, in the event, Wiramu Kingi refuses to move. And so inevitably, on the 17th of March 1860, troops are marched in from New Plymouth to Waitara, and the first shots of New Zealand's civil war started in Waitara over the disputed purchase of that block of land. Now, that war lasted about a year. In fact, it lasted exactly a year. And while Māori won lots of the early engagements, and some of you will have no doubt seen Jamie Balich's TV series, The New Zealand Wars, and the book, The New Zealand Wars, in which Balich describes the nature of some of those engagements, which Māori won hands down, he reckons, but which were reported back in England as fabulous victories for the British. I mean, they made all the classic mistakes. They wore the bright red shirts with the big white crosses over the front of them, and they stood in lines and fired at Māori while Māori were hiding in the bush and in the swamp firing back at them and picking them off. And they were absolutely devastated in lots of those fights. But in the end, of course, the Crown had the ability to ship out even more troops from Australia. Troops with all the machinery of war that they needed to beat Māori, and that's what they did. Lots of whole regiments were shifted out from Australia to New Zealand, mostly Scottish and Irish regiments that were used in that campaign against Te Ātaoa. And by then, all the other tribes of Taranaki, which had joined in with Te Ātaoa in that resistance campaign. Even Taranaki's mortal enemies from the past in Tainui joined in with them. The Kingitanga joined in with them. And of course, the thing that was galvanising all of this resistance was the land issue. So Wiramu Kingi stood for the retention and ownership by Māori of their land. In the end, though, they lost that fight. They were outgunned and they were outnumbered. Another war started in 1863, south of New Plymouth this time, for essentially the same reason. That war lasted even longer. It lasted about 4 years, that particular war. But by 1863, the Crown said, well, you Māoris have all been in rebellion. And because you've been in rebellion, you have to be punished. Your punishment will be the confiscation of your land.